someone said to me like 3 weeks ago, oh, you're not going on calls anymore. Wait a minute. I'm going on hundreds of calls a year, and they're only the bad ones.
My father's like my best friend, and he's even told me that I've changed.
What do we say? This too shall pass, right? A lot of stuff you get involved in, either on the job, at home, or just in life in general, it eats you up alive.
Things trigger you, and then there's times where you're living, you're right back there, whether it's visually, emotionally, psychologically.
When you're actually vulnerable, you ask for help from someone, you're actually more likely for them and other people to ask you for help later on.
I'm David Dashinger. Today, Bonnie Rumely is not hosting. She's going to be one of our esteemed guests. We'll be having a topic of no topic. So whatever comes up is going to be fair game for discussion. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Pete, Scott, and Bonnie after this.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
So today our guests in our roundtable are Pete Elsty, who has been a police officer for 24 years. He started his career with the NYPD 73rd Precinct in Brownsville, Brooklyn, and was part of the Street Narcotics Unit and Community Conditions Unit. Pete's currently serving with the Danbury Police Department, where he's a field training officer, crisis intervention team coordinator, and a member of Emergency Services Unit and a peer support team member. Scott Alvord is a licensed clinical social worker, and he's an experienced therapist and clinical supervisor. He works with the crisis intervention teams for two local police departments as their crisis intervention clinician. Bonnie Rumely is a licensed clinical social worker specializing in the treatment of first responders, and she's also a 21-year emergency medical technician and retired chief of her EMS agency. Pete Nicio, he's worked 20 years in the fire service. He's also served in the Marines and the Army National Guard, and Pete was diagnosed with PTSI in 2015 from multiple combat deployments and from everyday operations on emergency calls. Pete recently served as the master of ceremonies and auctioneer for the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team's first ever benefit last October, and he's quite an amazing MC. So come to the next one we have, because it'll be an amazing event.
Well, Pete, if you're going to MC another event, I gotta win something. I got to walk out with something. I didn't walk out with anything. There was a lot of good stuff going around that day.
Yeah, there was. Everybody on the hockey team's got really soft skin now from all the.
That's true.
That went a long way. We had a big chuckle from that. So
no, it was a good turnout. I really enjoyed it.
Maybe next year we'll have some hand tools or chainsaws or something. You know,
the good stuff
along the lines.
The good stuff.
We'll need a more manly theme. You mean the spa theme, the self care theme?
Yeah.
I mean, there's like no topic today. It's like just a relaxed conversation. I mean, you know, and when I brought this up to you guys, and it's great to have the crew here, and it's, you know, it's always something that we need to pinpoint, but there's always a background to that subject or that topic and stuff like that. Like, how do you get there? Like, how did you get to that point? You know, I'll use a perfect example. You know, the last couple of days have been tough. You know, I had some family stuff going on. I emailed everybody, said, hey, this is what happened. And you guys are great saying, hey, we can postpone it. But, you know, my heart was into it. And then there's a lot of stuff, you know, everything at work. And then you got other stuff, your personal life going on. And the little things that build up. Right. So when we asked you guys if you wanted to do this, and you guys gave a great response saying, absolutely, it's perfect. It's like, what topic do we have for it? You know, what are we going to name it? And, you know, I know I don't want to steal it from anybody from who gets paid more than me as a professional actor and stuff like that. You see motivational speakers and stuff, but you know, we what do we say? This too shall pass. Right. So, a lot of stuff you get involved in, either on the job, at home, or, you know, just in life in general, it eats you up alive. You know, it stresses you out. And that's the point. That's the point where I'm getting to, is that stress, you know. So the last couple of days has been stress for me, right? Mm-hmm. I always put everybody first, and I always do everything for everybody else because I want to make sure they're happy, and then I can take care of myself. Well, that part hit me hard this week, where it was, I need to do this because I need to be this for the family. I need to do this for work. I need to do this and that. And you see people, they talk to you, and they're like, you all right? You know, how are you doing? You know, are you okay? You know, I've had a couple people come up to me, and it was great. You know, I had Scott here. You know, we worked together for the mental health, the CIT program here, and he's part of peer support in you know, Danbury Police Department. He looked at me yesterday. He goes, "What's up?" That's all he had to say, and I just, you know, unleashed on him. You know, and he came out with some great stuff. I mean, he's like, "Take one thing at a time." You know, let's do this first, and you know, look at this perspective. And then obviously I went to the gym and I moved some weight and had, you know, do some stuff. And then I went home and I just chilled out. And I was like, and I even said it to myself, I'm watching TV. And I was like, this is all going to go away. This is all going to pass. You know, you just got to hit one thing at a time. You know, it's like, oh, I got to pay this bill because they're going to do this to me. Yeah, okay. Or, you know, I don't have my car. You know, when's my car going to be? That's stressful to a lot of people because they need it. But it's all going to pass because it's all going to get fixed. But time is on our side.
Right.
Time is on our side for this.
Yeah, I was going to say, in that moment, though, sometimes it feels like the most serious thing in the world. Like it's never, you know, it's never going to be different. Like, I'm kind of relating to, I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer about 5 years into my career, and I was shell-shocked from it. And I had to go into work, like, my last shift before I went out on, you know, disability, to talk to the shift and tell them, hey, man, you know, I'm going to be out for a while getting chemo and radiation. And one guy put his arm around me afterwards and, you know, he took me aside and he said, take it one step at a time, brother, you know, one step at a time. And all of a sudden it shifted everything. You can't fix it all in 1 second. You got to like be very like stepwise and very systematic and, you know, and try to just, you know, eat that elephant one bite at a time.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That's a great saying. I love it. Yeah.
Ready to improve your fundraising efforts and elevate your organization's communications through direct mail with Ari Lawler? Let Ari Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. With a proven track record of assisting fire departments, police unions, PBAs, churches, schools, and more, and raising much-needed funds through unique strategies and expertise. Technologically advanced, their production line and personnel are experts in navigating all the latest postal service regulations and mail requirements. Simply put, Ari Lawler will save you money on your next fundraising campaign. With over 35 years of experience, Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing are leaders in fundraising through direct mail. They too are first responders and understand your needs better than any other direct mail marketing company. And they're a family business who take pride in offering their clients the finest service at the most competitive rates. Experts in design, print, and mail, they do it all, and they get results. Experience the Ari Lawler difference. Check out their website, arilawler.com, or give them a call today. Ari Lawler Graphics and Printing. Raising money has never been so easy.
Pete hit the nail on the head, though, because when that time happens, everything just comes on you like a waterfall. And you want to, just because of who we are, we have to fix everything, you know. When I got hurt at work, I was just like, okay, I'm hurt. I'm out now. So let's figure out what's next. Let's go to the doctor. You know, I'm dealing with karma, so we all know how that works. And luckily it's pretty streamlined right now, but you know, what can I do to get better? The injury I have is a tendon, so it's just time. You know, I'm not 25 anymore, and it's just made out of rubber and bounce right back. So. But the job's going to be there. My brothers and sisters are going to be there, and they're going to be fine without me. It's not like, you know, they need me. You know, they tell me that they do. They miss me, which is great. That means a lot to me. So So yeah, it you know, like I said, Pete hit the nail on the head, and it's just when that happens initially, you think that because of our personalities, we have to fix everything right now and right this second, and we don't. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, I even have pieces of that as a therapist. I don't know about you, Scott, but you know, we like to fix people, right? We like to fix situations. So I get really frustrated sometimes with myself if I can't fix something fast enough, you know, and then I have to say, okay, slow down. You're a human. Right. You can't get, you know, and I'm giving everyone else advice all day, but I also have to take that advice,
right?
Which is easier said than done.
You're also dealing with a human too. So, you know, it's not like you can help them with everything you have to. I mean, the times that I've been in therapy, you know, my therapist has to, like Dave said, you got to eat an elephant in small bites. You know, you can't take care of everything. When I first went into therapy, my first therapist back in 14, I think it was 13 or 14 when I got back from Afghanistan, he was like, okay, tell me what's going on. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you want to know? And I had to go all the way back to 1993, you know, and he had to take that in little bits. You know, he couldn't take from 93 all the way to 13 and fix that whole time frame. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, it goes for you too, as a therapist, and people going to therapy have to understand that too. It's not, you're not going in for one sitting.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be one stop shop, you know, and like me dealing with the VA, they just wanted to over-medicate me and make me into some, you know, horror film character walking around my backyard, bumping into things with all the meds they wanted to put me on. At least that's what I felt. And I refused to. And my doctor said, you know, it's going to take longer that way. But that's how it works. And that's how I am. I'm not medicated now. And I haven't been, but that's how we have to do it. We can't do it all in one shot.
One of my favorite sayings is the forest through the trees. You know, you have to sort of take it one tree at a time. You have to keep in mind the forest, of course, but it doesn't work that way. You know, you have to handle it one at a time.
Scott, when you're responding to a crisis call, I mean, that's something has to be, you know, you have to do an intervention on scene to get things to a manageable place to maybe get into a longer term plan. So how do you approach that?
Quickly. Right. So
we would hope, Scott.
We have the luxury of building a rapport with somebody in private practice, right? You sit down, like Pete said, you hear the whole thing, the whole story, and then you can sort of pick and choose. You can navigate through some of the issues, identify what are priorities and what are not. And then you have some time. You know, in a crisis situation, you know, especially in this context here, you're seeing someone already escalated. You're seeing someone already at the top of what's going on, emotionally, physically, energetically, I mean, everything. So a lot of this is just building very quick rapport with somebody. And that can be in a variety of ways. I mean, we do a little small talk sometimes. Sometimes it's topical as to what's going on. Tell me about the knife you're holding. Tell me about what's going on today. Tell me about why we're here. You know, help me understand. And then a lot of it is empowering the person. So we have a whole list of things, information that we have, hopefully, before we arrive somewhere. We have the caller's information. We have in-house, you know, documentation, previous call history, stuff like that. A lot of the police that I work with here in Danbury are local. So they know some of the population, whether personally or through prior experiences, prior contact. So hearing it and empowering the person that's in front of me to tell me what's going on in their words, right, makes a big difference, right? Because it's not, they didn't call most of the time.
Right.
Somebody else called, whether it's through care or concern, whatever the case may be. And that goes a long way, right? A lot of the time, the people are disenfranchised. They're not feeling heard. They're not feeling valued, you know. And, you know, some of the stuff we head into is pretty out there. We get a lot of paranoia. We get a lot of delusions, a lot of depression. And these are people that are used to not being heard. So sometimes just really quickly, letting them be heard, validating and you know, letting them vent before we get into what's really in front of us here, allows them to feel comfortable and to feel as safe as possible in the situation.
You know, I have to say, I admire you for your role that you play in Danbury, because I know you're going out into the community like that, but then you're in the cruiser debriefing with the cops before and after the call. And if you think about it, it's such a no-brainer model. But when the model works, I mean, what Pete was saying before, how he talked to you about his family stuff and you helped him just, you know, remember the perspective. It's incredible. And I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't point that out here. The dual role is just awesome.
Thank you. You talk about that dual role, right? And you guys hit it on the head when you had Ernie back on your podcast.
Right?
He talked about
and
that.
And at that point,
once right? He talked about getting a clinician in the car, getting a clinician at the scene, and then debriefing. You know, he hit it like he hit it right on the head. I mean, that's what we do here. Talk about, you know, hey, while we're following the ambulance up, because we gave them an extra blanket saying, hey, we're going to follow you up, make sure you get to where you need to get. We're talking about, hey, what about, you know, I'll have tons of questions, you know, and he'll, you know, Scott will tell me, hey, you did a good job with this, but hey, next time try this. You know, it's not wrong what you did, but it's here's something else for you to build it better. You know, so we're always evolving in the car and stuff like that. And like I said, Ernie hit it. I listened to that podcast. Right on the head.
Pete, you, I think you have a great story about on scene debriefing, and how that's an amazing tool that, you know, I know you guys have used. Can you talk a little bit about that? How that's helpful for you?
Which call?
Right.
I know you brought. I know the one you had on Ernie's podcast. That was, you know, I think it was mine you were talking about, where I looked at one of my colleagues that I work with, who's a sergeant now, and I just looked at him. I said, "We need a debriefing now," and that's just something I called on myself because I knew my body was shutting down. I know there was the adrenaline dump that everybody talked about, and I felt it, and I was like, I need it. Go do it, because that's what we're going to need to do. And you know, it's not even after what the department can do for you on the peer support team side. And I'm going to go into my addiction a little bit. It's basically just who you have in your support circle, right? Yeah, I had an adrenaline dump. And we had a debriefing and a defusing and everything else like that from peer support. And the people at work were there for me, right? But who's there when I'm home, right? Could it get, and I'm going to ask the professionals, right? Could that adrenaline dump happen again after the fact? That was a question.
Just kidding.
This gets to the core of what we talk about here with trauma, with reliving, you know, vicarious trauma, with personal trauma, right? So you can get ramped up again at any point, right? Things trigger you, whether it's later that night, whether it's 10 years later, you know, and then there's times where you're right back there, whether it's visually, emotionally, psychologically, and you can live through those exact feelings over and over again, right? So I think the misnomer is a lot like, well, I'm okay, nothing's happened in the past week, month, 2 months, whatever, but the time frame is not, it's not closed, you know? It's an open time frame that things can happen over and over again, if you know. So I think at any point, you're sort of subject to that once you've been through it once, which is why first responders, you know, really deserve and need the education and support that this, you know, podcast is set up for, and these, you know, Wellness Responder Inc. And Cable and all of these things that are centered around supporting first responders, because it's so prevalent.
Responder Resilience is your place for insightful discussions for emergency services professionals, including law enforcement, EMS, fire service, 911 telecommunicators, animal control, rescue squads, K-9 officers, corrections, trauma-informed therapists, and agency leaders. we bring you leading experts and influencers in emergency services, sharing knowledge and tools to improve the culture of wellness and to inspire excellence in leadership. Tune in live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the weekly premiere on YouTube and Facebook. Or stream episodes anytime on RespondeTV.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Stay current with hot topics, informative content, and get valuable insights on how to lead a healthier life both on and off the job by subscribing to us on YouTube and Facebook. Responder Resilience is committed to our family of public safety professionals. Remember to like and subscribe today.
When you're in that immediate place after a critical incident, it's likely to happen more, in my opinion, because it's still in the short-term memory bank. It hasn't gone to long-term yet. So I think you're going to be living at a higher baseline until you either process it, debrief it, go to EMDR for it, or if it's one of those ones that you'll process on your own, it'll get stored and it won't turn into PTSI, then it's going to light up a lot in the beginning because the brain wants to heal itself. Right. So there's part of it that needs to happen for you to get better, but then there's part of it that can become symptomology. And that's where we have to look out for it. So, yeah, there's that initial dump, but then, yeah, there's going to be more. And it's knowing your body, knowing yourself. What do I do when that happens? Am I the kind of person who needs to take a nap when that happens? I know that when I would come back from really tough calls at EMS, I would just need some time alone. You know, so yes, I'd like to talk to everybody on the way back. I'd like to sit at the table, do my thing. But then somewhere in there, I need to be alone, you know, or if I have an intense day at work, let's say I see 8 people in a row and you know that I'm going on all the bad calls with everybody. They don't bring me like the roses and bunny stories that they bring me the worst ones. Someone said to me like 3 weeks ago, oh, you're not going on calls anymore. Wait a minute. I'm going on hundreds of calls a year and they're only the bad ones. Picture that. So I have to do self-care, obviously, to take care of that. But some days if I have 8 or 9 people in a row, yeah, I need a little alone time, you know, and that's something I have to communicate with my family. Hey, I'm going to shower. Let me get myself straightened and then I'll be down and do everything everyone needs. You know?
So, Pete, just so that I'm clear on what you were asking, as far as like you're talking about getting a second adrenaline dump, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Like a relapse, right?
Yeah. Right. Right. So just to add to that, I'm definitely living proof that that does happen. Went down to Orlando a few months ago with buddies of mine that I was in the Marines with. We went down to play golf. And my big problem coming back from Afghanistan is my sleep. And sleep always is kind of, you know, it's never been really solid. You know, you go into a bunk room at work and you get woken up by lights. One of my stories is the first real traumatic experience I had in my life was I was 18 years old and I got woken up by a galvanized garbage can getting thrown across the squad bay at Parris Island. And then the lights went on at like 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, that's my first drop in the bucket of trauma. And then it just obviously increased from there. But so Afghanistan, I was at CAF, which is Kandahar, second largest base in the country, down in the south district or south area. And we'd get rocketed on a regular basis. So, you know, in the middle of the night, they're going to lob these rockets in at you, and you hope that it doesn't come near you. Or, you know, luckily we never got hit, just hit our surrounding areas and some empty tents or what have you. Well, I come home and I'm waking up to thuds, to impact thuds. And it's in my mind, obviously. And, you know, my wife's, you know, trying to console me and calm me down. And now you want to talk about like what you just said, having that second adrenaline dump. And now it's 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm wide awake. Right. So I gotta go out and wander the house and, you know, be vigilant to make sure that, you know, the Taliban's not trying to get into my back door or what have you. So we're down in Orlando and I'm not, I'm not even putting two and two together. And it's the first night, and I'm putting my head down, sleeping. And I'm just getting to that falling asleep spot. And I hear thuds. And I wake up. And I'm like, okay, all right, I'm hearing them again, whatever. Well, then I keep hearing them. There's thuds, and there's more thuds. There's impact thuds. And now I start freaking out. Now like my adrenaline's up. I literally levitated out of my bed, and I'm going over to the window to see what's going on. Well, it's Disney, and If you know anything about Disney, which I really don't, they shoot off fireworks every night. And these fireworks are going off, and we're close enough that it sounded exactly like these rockets that were impacting. And I laugh about it now, but I didn't sleep the rest of the night. It was like, 11:30 or whatever. They set them off, and that adrenaline dump hit me so hard that I just stayed up, watched TV. I probably fell back to sleep around like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I was just so wound up. And, people have that stuff. Luckily, I know what it is, thanks to my therapy. But, men and women out there that deal with it, they don't know what it is sometimes. And it's tough. It's got to be tough. It's scary as hell for me. And I know what it is, any of us that have dealt with it.
I think you raise a good point, though. There's a difference between understanding and action, So finding some sort of coping mechanism, like it's so important to be able to identify it, right? But then try to figure out what to do with that information is often the harder part, And a lot of people don't even make it that first stage, I don't know about blissful, but ignorance, willing ignorance, or difficulty with identifying, finding the right person, finding the right modality, But then the harder part, I think, after is, okay, that's great to know that. What do I do with it? How do I get some good sleep? What can I employ when that's happening to try to ease through?
It's interesting when you mention the thud, it brings something up in my own personal life. And obviously as an EMDR therapist, we've done EMDR. But when I hear a thud, I think of my grandfather falling out of the bed. Oh. I was raised by him and I took care of him, from a young age, college, grad school, in my 20s. I was his primary caretaker, and my bedroom was above his, and every night, just about every night, fall out of bed and I'd hear the thud. So I was programmed to hear the thud, to get up, to run downstairs. So it's interesting how like one thing could hit all of us in a different way. And I've processed it, thankfully. Cause when you have little kids, what do? They thud all over the place. So if I hadn't worked that out, I think it would have been a really bad time for me. But it's interesting how one thing means something to all of us, right? Well, and it's reminding yourself in that moment, this really isn't happening again, right? So Pete is talking about in those initial days going home, feeling it again. You're talking about it decades later, the other Pete. And it's really ultimately, in that moment, you have to find how to get grounded, orient yourself to where you are in the room, but where you are in your body. And for you, you had to remind yourself, I'm in Disney. I'm not in Kandahar, So there's like a cognitive behavioral awareness piece that I think is important, along with grounding techniques that you can actually use in those moments. And sometimes people do need to call, right? Or if that happens to Pete at work today, Scott's there, right? So he could go say to Scott, hey, I feel like I'm on that call again. And then Scott can sit with him and do some grounding. So the more therapy, the more self-awareness, self-care you do, the more you're going to hone in when you need something, and you're going to likely know what to do for yourself. But that's the other thing people don't talk about therapy. They think it's just feelings all day, but we give you so many strategies, right? So it's coming to learn different skills, just like you would do as a police officer or a fireman.
This episode is made possible by R.E. Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let R.E. Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
Come on. Check it.
My heart will move.
I think it's a good point. It's not just the therapy part. I mean, normalizing is so much of what I do, right? Even if I don't have an answer to what you had said earlier, you know, it's not all being the guide and coach and move and having all the right answers. Sometimes it's just listening and saying, you know what? I deal with so many people, like, this is so common. And I don't know about you, Bonnie, but a lot of my clients are like, really? Like, other people just like, yeah, all the time. This is something that you're a human. This is what happens, you know?
Yeah. Or you get the cop who comes in and they're like,
hey, yeah.
Does anyone else do this? I'm like, yes, we can say it out loud. They do it. It's normal. You're okay. It's funny though, right? Because I think everyone feels like they're alone until they share their experience with someone else. Mm-hmm. And that could go for a multitude of issues, whether you have cancer, whether you're a widow, whether you're a responder, right? Like, you have to recognize that having people around you that understand, to me, is one of the most important things you can have.
That's where the magic of groups comes in, right? Where you know, peer support groups or other support groups, like you said, Bonnie, could be for cancer, could be first responders, could be AA. Doesn't that, you know, not feeling like you're alone and isolated, doesn't that change the game?
My addiction, which I'm open and very transparent about, 4 years sober now, and I would never change anything in the world to go back to drinking again. I wake up with more energy. I wake up. I'd like to sleep longer, but I have to control my mind to do that. I got that sleep machine, and which works 100%. I was before I got that machine, I was fighting death like, what did I tell you, 51 times or something like throughout the night, and I woke up winning all the time, but now I don't have to fight that much, you know?
Is that why you had that bluish color all the time, Pete? Is that why you were showing up blue? Yeah, okay. God, I just want to make sure.
Maybe at the next event we can auction off a nice sleep pack machine.
Yeah.
That sucker will go fast.
Yeah, it would. But you talk about the support outside, just people like Scott, right? I work with Scott. I know I can call him anytime, right? But outside of Scott, I have a group, right? I have a support group. I have my friends who have gotten closer to me because they've learned to understand, you know, what I've been through, what I go through. If they don't hear from me, they check in with me. And there's also special people too, right? There's the special people that just their presence, right, helps you. You know, I have someone very special to me that their presence, you know, just what they did for me helped me, right? Mm-hmm. And then I know I can count on that person anytime. Mm-hmm. You talk about whatever it is, it's an event on the job or it's an addiction or something like that. You're not going through that by yourself. You know, you're going through it. People are on your back going through it with you, like your family, your friends, your coworkers, all that. You know, you're not going through that alone. You know, you're bringing them with you and they're trying to help you, but you just keep going through that addiction. Until you come to the point where you're like, you need to step up and you say, like, oh, like with my addiction, it's I hit rock bottom, right? Now I need help. Now I'm going to rehab. Now I'm meeting with my therapist. And Bonnie, thank you for asking do I need to make that phone call for you because I was going through stuff with my family. But that's what it is. That's the support. That's the outside part. Yeah, there's work to be done. You know, there's always work to be done. And you know what? And if the tools that you're given, if you're using the tools that are given for whatever the PTSD or the PTSD or the addiction or just an event that happened at work, if it fails, that just means there's more work to be done. That's all. It doesn't mean it's the all end all. That's it. You just have to work a little bit harder, and there's more work to be done. You know, you do have your support group, which my support group I think is awesome. Some people don't even know they're in it, but I'm like, yeah, you're it.
Uh-oh, Pete and David, we're in trouble.
This is why we wanted to do this. No, but I know, like, you know, you can call on these people, and they'll help you. They're not going to be like, oh, he's at it again. Oh, this, that, and another thing, and then, you know. You know, and then there's some people you won't call at all, right?
Right.
But they're there. Yeah. Hey, how you doing? I'm good. Thanks. Right. But it's that it doesn't even have to be a question that certain people have to ask you. You know, I get energy from people just being around me. Just that, like, I go back to personal presence. You know, and people will come and go. Your circle will get bigger. Your circle will get smaller. You know, I have another person in my they just entered my support group. They don't know it yet. You know, they're a person that is willing to help me, and they said it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I kind of rambled on a little bit, but. Surprised Scott didn't hit me because usually
that never happens.
When we do our speeches,
that was our whole point, though. Oh, bro. He's kicking you under the table there.
Yeah, look over here.
I think that's the whole point of this group. You know, just like throwing stuff at the dartboard and hitting topics. I was watching American Sniper yesterday. Because I'm a glutton for punishment, apparently. But there's always been a scene. You know, there's all the shooting and the combat and stuff like that. But there's always been a few scenes in that movie that I forgot until yesterday that tear me up. Because my parents, who I'm very, very close with, my father especially, I obviously love my mother to death. My father's like my best friend, and he's even told me that I've changed. Whether it's the fire service, you know, I'll never forget some of the calls. You know, suicide by train a couple of times. I mean, those are just, we all know how that ends up. And then the military experience, but watching the movie. I was painting while I had it kind of in the background, but then when Chris Kyle comes home, you know, he's this tough Texan sniper, you know, he's a Navy SEAL. So out of everybody in the world, who's not going to need help, who's not going to need a support system like Pete, what you're talking about, you know, and he finally started to reach out to get a support system, whether he knew it or not. I think when he started going to these shooting events, which eventually is how he died. If you know the story, I'm not sure if I just screwed it up for you, but it hits me a lot because I see, and by no means am I saying I went through anything that Chris Kyle went through, but I see me in some of those scenes, just as I'm sure we would all see ourselves just watching it. Not because he's a SEAL or a sniper, but how he was dealing, tight-lipped. I'm fine. How are you? You know, I'm good. But then at the same time, his wife saying to him, I want you to be a human again. And I get choked up every time the scene comes on because, you know, I think of my father telling me, you're not the same. You haven't been the same. And I know I'm not the same. Like, before I went to Afghanistan, I used to laugh a lot more. And I realized this. I realized, you know, I am who I am. And whatever made me that way, made me that way. But to kind of piggyback on what Pete was saying, you know, I watched that movie and I realize, and just as Pete's saying, that, you know, he's got these people that don't know that they're in his support system. I have so many friends that all of a sudden, you know, I'll see them. And they've done a world of difference just by seeing them. You know, there's a few people that I work with, brothers of mine, that make me laugh, and they make me laugh hard, and I don't laugh that much anymore. And they don't, I mean, it's not like I've gone and I've given them a membership card to the Pete Nicchio support system team or anything like that.
Well, you gave me one. I mean, you're cheating them, you know?
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's great to hear, you know, like, you know, it's good to know, Pete, that you've got that. And, you know, I hope more of our brothers and sisters, whoever sees this, realize that, you know, you can reach out to people without having to formally make them into a member of your support team. Mm-hmm. It's just so important. And, you know, like I said, going back to the movie, I watched that movie and I realized, you know, he was alone. He was alone because he was fighting his demons by himself, because we're A-type personalities and we don't need any. I say it all the time in my classes, and Bonnie, you've heard me say it before. Mm-hmm. We're type A personalities. No one helps us. You know, mm-hmm. you look at my resume and you look at all of our resumes, not just mine, and you see what we've done in our lives and what we've dealt with, and we don't need help. We're the one that everyone's calling. You know, I've gone around the world to help people, you know, right. people that want to shoot at me or stab me or, you know, and then at the same time, I'm trying to make sure they get fed or they can live under a democratic umbrella, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the people that I serve in Westport, you know, they need help, and I'm there to help them. But mm-hmm. we get this ingrained in our brains that, you know, no one needs to help us. But I think, you know, those of us that have gone through it, we've learned the equation. Mm-hmm. of how to make sure that we do have that support system. And it's so important. So,
well, you're bringing up an interesting feedback loop that I've sort of observed in my own life, but also in all of you, which is that when you're actually vulnerable, you ask for help from someone, you're actually more likely for them and other people to ask you for help later on, because you've opened a door that was closed off. And so people have floodgates sometimes, Pete, you might be one of them. But when you think about that, just by being yourself, showing the weakness, even if it's to another first responder, I guarantee you that person will ask you for help one day.
Sure.
And you'll be there, because yeah. that's the feedback loop that we're all on together. Right. So when you talk about your brothers and sisters in EMS, military, police, fire, dispatch, wherever, we have that with each other. I mean, I have my list. I know who I can call if I'm lying in a gutter dying, and I know they will just about teleport there. Doesn't matter where I am, they will be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're blessed to allow that, it will be there for you.
That's, you're blessed to allow that. That's the thing. That's the first step. We have to, you know, I'll teach my class to fire departments, you know, and it's mm-hmm. the mental health class. And you just see some of their faces, you know, like, I don't need this guy. What's this guy talking about? And,
yeah,
you know, but that's the first step. That's that, like I call it, the kicking the door open thing. So it's funny that you use that same analogy, but, and that's it. Once you let that happen, and it's so hard though. It's so hard to do. It's so hard to accept that you need help and that, you know, you need to receive it. But then receiving it and then giving it at the same time, Bonnie, I've told you a million times, this is therapeutic mm-hmm. for me when I help others.
Yeah, you know, we do get changed by doing the job or being in the military or being yeah. a first responder. And that, at least I feel like I've changed, you know, like I think there's a certain armor that we put up, mm-hmm. You know, as a response to seeing the things we have to see and deal with and handle and how the world, you know, we have a new perspective of the world that we never had before we started doing this job or being out there in the world, seeing all the, you know, the crappy things that happen. And so as part of that, it makes it that much harder to, you know, get that armor down or to let the walls down and ask for help or be vulnerable. But one of the magical things that happens on this podcast is we have guests who are willing to let it all hang out and be completely vulnerable and honest, you know, like you guys are being today. And I think that has a really synergistic ripple effect, because now that we've spoken our truth, someone who's listening to it can say, you know what, maybe it's okay for me to be vulnerable. It's okay for me to ask for help. It's okay for me to, you know, take a look at myself and see, you know, what could I be doing differently to change my life for the better. So, you know, I just have to salute everybody who's coming on our show, like you guys, and Bonnie, to put that out there, you know, without regard to, you know, the consequence of being so open and honest about personal stuff. It just, it's a huge, huge service to the people out there who need it.
Right.
I think that's so well said, Dave. I think that, you know, the 12-step program has quite a bit right with it. But I think one of the things that always stands out for me is, like, when you're looking for a sponsor, when you're dealing with someone, it's picking up the phone every day, right? So that when you really need to pick it up, it's not heavy, right? Is like the colloquialism of it. But these don't have to be momentous calls. These don't have to be momentous situations that are breakthroughs or that are waiting till it builds up to call, you know, just checking in, you know, Pete, like you said too, like people just say, hey, how's it going? You know, it's like, these things make a big difference, you know? They don't have to be built up and huge or traumatic or anything. Just letting that steam go and reminding yourself that you have, you know, we always talk about resources, right? Like making sure that you know who your resources are, where to call, who you can reach out to for what, and doing it frequently, you know? And if you don't have anything to say, you have no idea what's going to be on the other end of that phone. Maybe you're just calling just to say hi and they're going through something. And boy, did you call at the right time, you know? We see that a lot. And that's something that's so cool about just having those connections, building those relationships, is that it's an open channel back and forth.
Well, to add to that, there are times, and I had to really teach myself how to be vulnerable that way more when I was in my 20s. So now I'm kind of a pro at it. But back then, like when someone called me and they said, how are you? I'd have to make a conscious decision about, am I going to tell them how I really am? Or am I going to put up that facade that we all have? I mean, we all have to put it up here and there, right? But I would have to ask myself, all right, am I fake me today or am I real me? And if I was really, really struggling with my grandfather, or let's say I didn't sleep or he's in the hospital, things like that. If I was really shot, then I would say, no, I'm not okay today. Actually, he's in the hospital again, you know, and then the person who's calling knows what's going on and I'm allowing them to sort of swoop in the way that they know how. Right. So even when that phone call comes or that text, we all to this day, even this morning, a phone call or text you get, you make a choice. Am I going to be my true self or am I going to be my fake self? And I've learned that when I'm my true self, that's when the world opens for me. That's when I find good people. That's when I let people be there for me. That's when they let me be there for them. And I've learned that there's nothing to be gained in that fakeness, you know, and maybe it's just going through stuff in our lives. We get to a stage two where we just, the bandwidth for that garbage is gone. Because time is short. We all see that in our lines of work. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And I don't really want to be wasting my time not being the true me. And if somebody doesn't like that, then I guess we're not good friends. You know, what can I say? But we all have that choice when we get the text or we get the phone call.
This episode is made possible by RE Lawler Graphics and Printing. Let RE Lawler help you create your next direct mail fundraising campaign that gets results. To learn more, visit relawler.com.
Kind of wrapping up our conversation in the next 5 minutes or so, and we could easily go on for a couple of hours. Maybe we'll have to come back to this again. Let me throw out this question as a way to kind of give some final thoughts, and we'll start with Pete Nicio, then Bonnie, then Pete Elstee, and then Scott. If you were addressing a recruit class or a new class of therapists, what's one nugget of wisdom you would pass on to them?
I guess patience. Patience either way, you know, if you're not to sound funny, but if you're a patient, you have to be patient with yourself, and the therapists and the recruits have to be patient. It's
society now is everything is instant. Everything is immediate. And, you know, you go to the doctor, like Bonnie asking me before about my, my foot, how's that driving you up a wall? Mm-hmm. Well, and like Pete said, you're going to take one thing at a time. You know, this is going to pass. Patience on both sides, because I've seen therapists that don't have the patience. I've seen therapists that say to me, well, and this was said to me, you're in the wrong line of work. And this is about 15 years into my career. I'm in the wrong line of work. That's it. That was his answer for why I'm having night terrors and I can't be around crowds that I'm not comfortable with, why I have to sit with the door in front of me at restaurants. Didn't take the time to try and navigate through my mental health. And then on my side too, I can't go into that therapist's office and think that he or she is going to snap a finger and I'm going to be taken care of. It's not a magic pill. Mm-hmm. You know, again, what Pete said before, it's something that it's going to pass. We're going to get through this. As much as I just said that, maybe I don't laugh as much anymore. I'm a better person now for the events and the things that I lived through. I see the world obviously in a different way, and it took a long time for that. The combat and the fire part, those are quick. Everything like that slaps you in the face in mock speed. But it's being able to digest it and live with it that takes time. Mm-hmm. But it's worth it, because instead of it riding you, meaning your mental health challenge, I'm riding it. And I told a soldier that once. I said, don't let it ride you. Get on top of it and ride it. Control it. Learn to live with it, because it's something you're going to have to deal with.
Well, if I was in front of an EMS recruit class, which does happen sometimes, some EMT classes especially ask me to come in and teach our trauma lecture before these people ever get in a rig, which I can't say enough about. To get in front of somebody before they get out in the world, that's optimal for all of us. And if I'm in that room in front of them, I'll say, don't focus on being a hero. Focus on being you and talking to the people around you. Talk to your crew. Talk to your superiors. Talk to that mentor. Because there's someone older who's been there longer than you who you can always go to and talk to. I don't care where you are. There's always that one person. So I would encourage people, use them. Talk. Don't try to shut this thing down and stuff it inside and take it on as my identity has to be quiet. It shouldn't be that way. We should talk about these things with each other. And if I was in front of a group of therapists, how we're trained as therapists is really hardcore. Like, you are a closed book. You don't disclose anything to clients. I mean, when I got my social work degree, it was to the extreme of you don't even have one picture in your office that shows anything about your own life. I will tell you, if you're a therapist who wants to work with first responders, military, it's not going to work. If you want to work with that population, you have to be your true self that I was talking about before. If you are not your true self, they are never coming back. So I say to those people, you be you. Let them know something about yourself. You know, I could get judged for even sharing that personal life stuff that I shared before. And you know what? That's okay. Judge me, because what I said before is going to make me more credible, and it's going to make someone else speak up about something today. So for all those therapists who want to be with this population, be yourself. Just be you. And if you can't do that, then I don't think that you should be focusing on this population, because they need that from you.
That's huge. Thank you, Bonnie.
Peter? So, That's all great stuff. You know, Pete saying patience and time and it's on outside, and Bonnie, what I take back from what you say is be yourself. You know, don't be something you're not, you know. And that was part of my addiction. Was I drank and to be somebody that I'm not, But now that I'm who I am, it's great. You know, it's a good time. But to tell somebody in a recruitment class, I would tell them it's the old saying is it's okay not to be okay. If you're not okay, then you have to have, you know, you have to have your resources. You know, yes, it's okay to go talk to somebody about what went wrong or what went right. Why can't you talk to somebody about what went right? You know, and it's finding that resource that works for you, somebody who understands you, somebody that understands your job. You know, what Pete said about somebody telling him he's in a wrong work for his life. And it's like, really? The wrong line of work? Are you serious? We signed up to this. You know, we are a special breed, right? We are a special breed. We are the alpha or whatever you want to call us. But we do need help, right? And we do have to ask for it. And I think that is key, you know, saying it's okay not to be okay and then to ask for help. And it's not a sign of weakness for me, you know, it's a sign of strength. And it's shown that because people ask me, how did you do that? Well, I asked, right? Open your mouth and ask, yep. Right? So, I mean, that's what I would tell them. And again, to be yourself and to be patient because time is on our side, right? There's no rush to do everything right away. Work on it and build yourself up.
Scott, what are your thoughts?
Well, Pete took my "it's okay not to be okay." That is one of my go-tos. I think also, though, you especially as first responders and us as clinicians, I think it's ingrained that we are the go-tos, and we need to have the answers, right? We need to have a response that's appropriate. We have to have the knowledge behind it. We have to be the one that is in control of whatever the situation is. And I think it's okay not to be. I think it's okay to not have an answer. I think it needs to be normalized a little bit more, right? As people, first responders or therapists go through trauma, vicarious trauma, life, you know, issues, whatever's going on, the pull and I think the push is to really have an understanding of what's going on and have a goal in mind. And I think sometimes, sort of going back to everything that we've said so far, I think reaching out and being okay with saying, I don't know what's going on with me. I don't know what the next step is. I don't know why I'm feeling like I'm feeling. It doesn't make sense to me. Needs to be normalized more, you know, especially as departments, EMS, fire, police, whatever, army, you know, military as well, are sort of breaking free from some of the old stigmas of, you know, you have to be okay. You can't let anyone know if you're not, you know, just suck it up, you know, whatever it is. I think it's so important nowadays that it needs to be normalized to ask for help and to be open to that, you know, and trying to look at, you know, the forest from the trees, look at the long-term life health, you know, look at mental health, look at career health, look at everything, because it's not a sprint, you know, it's a race. And so I think, you know, being open to longer-term health and understanding is needs to be prioritized more.
Pete Elstee, thank you so much for instigating this idea. It really turned out to be a great way to do it.
He's the instigator.
He started this.
But you must have had a vision that we could have a great conversation, and we did today. So thank you all for being part of that and for sharing what you have. No doubt we're going to touch somebody with what we've shared today, and we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And remember to like and subscribe. YouTube, Responder Resilience. Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV. BBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, and all the podcast platforms. Go to our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe. Be kind to yourself. Take care.